Queen's Gaels are making the long trek to Windsor to battle the Lancers for a shot at the Yates Cup. These two teams last met on homecoming, where Windsor stole a victory on a last-second field goal. Can Queens avenge their homecoming loss, or will they suffer another agonizing semifinal stumble? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM to find out. We go live at 12:45 with the Grad Club pregame show and the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff.
As the cooler weather sets in the Kingston area, CFRC and KPP concerts are turning up the heat with a stacked fall lineup. On October 10th, check out Shania Twink, followed by the Arrogant Worms on October 11th at Broom Factory. Sloan hits the Ale House on October 18th, and folks can catch the Grapes of Wrath on October 22nd, Crywank on November 1st, and Georgia Harmer on November 8th at the Broom. Billy Faffel, Guy Davis, and Rhea May are also playing at the Broom on November 12th, 15th, and 16th, respectively. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com.
Welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. There's a story my grandmother used to tell me on long summer nights. The story of Savitri and Satyavan. She would say it softly, almost like a song, her voice rising and falling like the strings of a sitar. I never understood as a child why she called it a story of life and breath rather than a love story, but Now I think I do know. Once upon a time, in the heart of an Indian kingdom, there lived a princess named Savitri. She was known not only for her beauty, but for her clarity. The kind of mind that doesn't just accept fate, but examines it. When it was time to marry, Savitri did not wait for a matchmaker. She wanted to choose for herself. So she traveled across forests and fields, temples and towns, until she met Satyavan. He wasn't a prince or a warrior. He was a simple man who lived in the forest, splitting firewood and caring for his blind parents. But when Savitri looked at him, she saw something rare. Kindness that did not need to be spoken aloud. There was, however, one condition that would make any parent tremble. A sage told her, Satyavan is destined to die 1 year from today. But Savitri didn't flinch. She said, if I must love for only a year, then let that year be mine. She married him, left her palace, and moved into the forest. She learned to cook over a clay stove, to draw water from the river, to braid her hair with vile jasmine. And every morning she sat beside him while he played a flute he had carved for himself. Days turned into months. The year passed like the slow unfolding of a rag, patient, deliberate, full of hidden grace notes. But when the 12th month came, the rhythm began to change. Even the trees seemed quieter, as if they knew what was coming. One morning, Satyavan said, let's go to the woods. The sky looks bright today. Savitri followed, her heart steady but heavy. As he swung his axe into the tree, he suddenly paused. His arms weakened, his breath shortened. He leaned against her shoulder and whispered, I feel so tired. And there, beneath the great banyan tree, Satyavan's head rested in her lap, his breath slipping away like the fading note of a veena. When he exhaled one last time, the air around her shifted. From the shadows, a tall, calm figure appeared. Yam, the god of death. His voice was neither cruel nor kind, just final. Princess, he said, your husband's time has come. I will take his soul. Savitri could have screamed. She could have begged, but instead she bowed her head and said, I understand, but if you are walking away with him, then I will walk too. The god raised an eyebrow. No living being may follow me. I'm not following, she replied softly. I'm just walking in the same direction. And so she walked through the forest, across rivers, over stones that bruised her feet, never breaking her silence. Finally, the god turned and said, you are steadfast, Savitri. I will grant you a boon. Anything except your husband's life. She thought for a moment and said, then give sight to my father-in-law who has lived too long in darkness. The god nodded. It is done. But Savitri kept walking. After a while, he said, turn back now. The living cannot walk with the death. And she replied, the living cannot stop caring for the dead. He sighed and offered another boon. Ask again. Then restore my father-in-law's lost kingdom, she said. He has suffered long enough. It shall be so. Still, she did not stop. Step by step, her sari torn, her hair loose, she followed. Yama finally said, you are testing me, Savitri. She smiled. I am only learning from you, Lord, how to be patient. For the third time, he offered her another boon. Ask wisely now, he said. And Savitri said, grant me 100 sons to bless my future. Yama agreed before realizing the trap in her words. 100 sons? How will that be if your husband remains with me? And she bowed again. Then give him back so that your promise can be fulfilled. For the first time, Death himself laughed. A full warm laugh that sounded almost human. Savitri, he said, you have conquered me, not with tears, but with reason. And it released Satyavan's soul, returning it to her hands like a precious thread. When Savitri opened her eyes, dawn had broken. Satyavan stirred beside her as if walking from sleep. They walked home together, the forest light turning gold around them. When my grandmother told this story, she would hum softly after it ended. A long, low note, that kind that lingers like the drone of a tanpura. And she said, remember, love isn't loud, it's steady. To me, the story of Savitri and Satyavan isn't just about defending death. It's about rhythm. In Indian classical music, the beauty of a rag isn't in the climax, it's in the patience, in how each note unfolds, how silence fills the space between sounds. Savitri understood that rhythm. She did not fight fate. She followed it until she found her own harmony within it. When I first moved to Canada, I used to listen to recordings of the violin and the veena together. They sounded so different, one earthy and one airy, but one played in silence and sync. They made a unity that felt almost sacred. That's what Savitri reminds me of. Balance between the seen and the unseen, love and loss, action and surrender. Here, when life feels uncertain, assignments piling up, seasons changing too fast, family far away, I think of her. Of walking forward even when the path feels dark, trusting that understanding can be its own form of courage. Savitri's stories is not about miracles. It's about the music of staying, of breathing, of speaking softly to what scares you until it listens back. So tonight, if you find yourself in a quiet moment, maybe walking home under the Kingston sky or sitting by the lake with headphones in, think of Savitri. Imagine her footsteps on the forest floor, slow and certain, weaving her rhythm into the world. Because sometimes the truest form of strength is not in stopping the storm, but in learning to walk with it, keeping your own melody steady until even the sky hums along.
Sexual Assault Center Kingston is a nonprofit organization providing confidential, free, non-judgmental support for all survivors age 12 and up of recent and/or historical sexual violence in KFLNA since 1978. At the heart of our work is a deep partnership with our community and all its members. If you or someone you know has experienced sexual violence, please note that you are not alone. We provide counseling, crisis support, and advocacy services at no charge. Please visit our website at sackingston.com to learn more about our counseling and advocacy services. If you or someone you know are in need of crisis support, please reach out to our 24/7 telephone crisis support line by dialing 1-877-544-6424. You can also text or chat with a trained crisis responder from noon to midnight every day by texting 613-544-6424 or visiting WeBelieveSurvivors.ca. For more information about our services, please call our office at 613-545-0762 or email us at sack@sackingston.com. We believe you and we hear you.
Journey today comes to an end. Thank you so much for listening and see you next Friday, 3 p.m. on Melodies of Myth.
Hey, this is Cleo, and I hope you folks will join me Tuesdays at 5 for my new show, All Tunes. From punk rock to folk, we got it all. Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM. See you Tuesday.
Thou wouldst have none of me, Jokanan. Thou rejected me. Thou didst speak evil words against me. Thou didst bear thyself toward me as to a harlot, as to a woman that is a wanton. To me, Salome.
Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Indonesian gay party raid busts 34. Queer couples will finally count in South Korea. And a seven-veiled tribute to Oscar Wilde. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm David Hunt.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 25th, 2025. The scene was a private party in a Surabaya, Indonesia hotel. Then the doors of the two adjoining rooms suddenly burst open, and security police arrested 34 men for attending what they allege is a gay sex party. That's how it went during the early morning hours of October 19th in Indonesia's second largest city. After 2 days in custody, the arrestees were paraded through the streets, surrounded by the press as officials trumpeted the mass arrests. Several pictures taken after their public perp walk show the 34 men wearing matching orange shirts, trying to hide their faces as they sit cross-legged, barefoot, bound together with zip ties, while engulfed by photographers. Police officials claimed they were acting on tips about suspected unusual activity on one of the hotel floors. The evidence collected from the scene included contraceptives, cell phones, and other electronic devices. There have been at least three such raids this year in Indonesia. It's expected that those arrested this week will also be charged with violating the majority Muslim country's anti-pornography laws. Those laws include a ban on deviant sexual intercourse. Several partygoers will also be charged with organizing and/or financing the get-together. Several human rights groups have condemned these raids on private gatherings in Indonesia. They're calling for the men's immediate release.
Cohabitating same-gender couples will be counted in South Korea's upcoming national population and housing census. The Ministry of Data and Statistics will allow those households to pick spouse and cohabitating partner in the headcount that surveys 20% of South Korean households every 5 years. Rainbow Action Korea calls the change a historic decision that represents a rare form of official recognition. However, the coalition of 49 LGBTQ organizations faulted the government for not adequately publicizing the change. The announcement came on October 21st, the day before the census began. There's no marriage equality in South Korea and no civil unions. Since 2023, cohabitating queer couples have been eligible for National Health Insurance Service spousal coverage. A slim majority of the East Asian country's socially conservative population is still uncomfortable with public displays of affection between same-gender couples. Those public opinion surveys also suggest that they oppose marriage equality. The anti-equality sentiment can be attributed to lobbying by the United Christian Churches of Korea and high-profile hate campaigns by loosely affiliated groups like Anti-Homosexuality Christian Solidarity, according to the news outlet LGBTQ Nation.
Transgender and intersex people in the Virgin Islands now have an easier pathway to changing the gender markers on their birth certificates and official government documents. Under an executive order by Governor Albert Bryan Jr., there are two alternatives: present a court order confirming their surgical, hormonal, or other treatment for the purpose of gender transition, or present a statement signed under penalty of perjury by a licensed healthcare provider, confirming their treatment or evaluation. The Virgin Islands is the only U.S. territory that bans bias based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Still, a bill to establish a process for changing gender markers stalled in the legislature late last year. So Democratic Governor Bryan decided to bypass the lawmakers. His October 13th order specifically directs the Department of Health's Office of Vital Statistics and the Bureau of Motor Vehicles to honor gender marker change requests according to the order's requirements. In the words of Bryan's press statement, "Our administration remains committed to fairness dignity, and respect for every Virgin Islander. This executive order brings the Virgin Islands in line with modern standards of inclusion and ensures that all residents have access to accurate and affirming government identification.
Anti-bias protections in healthcare for transgender people are being stripped away by a U.S. federal judge. More than two dozen Republican state attorneys general had challenged the Biden administration's guidance. Judge Louis Girola, Jr. of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Mississippi agreed that the Department of Health and Human Services exceeded its authority by implementing regulations redefining sex discrimination and prohibiting gender identity discrimination. The lawsuit was led by Tennessee Attorney General Jonathan Scrimeti, the same Scrimeti whose name is attached to this year's major U.S. Supreme Court victory upholding Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. He proclaimed in a celebratory statement, "Our 15-state coalition worked together to protect the right of healthcare providers across America to make decisions based on evidence, reason, and conscience. This decision restores not just common sense, but also constitutional limits on federal overreach."
Another U.S. federal judge is blocking an anti-trans Trump administration threat. Oregon-based District Judge Ann Aiken is issuing an injunction to keep the Health and Human Services Department from withholding education funds to states that do not remove all references to gender ideology from public school sex education classes. $35 million in federal grant funding is at stake, according to Reuters. Washington, Oregon, and Minnesota are leading 16 states and the District of Columbia in a suit to challenge the administration. Judge Aiken informed the plaintiffs and federal officials of her plans to issue an injunction during a telephone conference. One of the plaintiffs' lawyers called the demand an effort to edit transgender kids out of their curricula. Trump officially erased the existence of transgender people soon after he took office for a second time, with an executive order declaring that there are only two genders in the United States, male and female.
But wait, there's one more injunction against the Trump administration. Virginia-based U.S. District Judge Patricia Tolliver Giles' order against the Department of Defense brings library books and curriculum materials that discuss race, sexual orientation, and gender back to department-run schools. More than 67,000 students attend classes run by the Department of Defense Education Activity in the U.S. and 11 other countries. Close to 600 books were determined too woke for students of military families. They included A is for Activists by Innocento Negar, Being Jazz, My Life as a Transgender Teen by Jazz Jennings, and From Hashtag Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation by Kiyonga Yamata Taylor. Judge Giles has thus far sided with six military families who sued the Defense Department over the removals in April. But her narrow order only applies now to the five schools attended by the plaintiffs. The families are being represented by the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU's press statement called the military-run schools' censorship astonishing in its scope and scale. The civil rights group expressed its satisfaction that the court had vindicated the students' First Amendment protections.
Finally, Florida's Rainbow War is catching on. Right-wing Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott has ordered the state's Department of Transportation to remove all decorative crosswalks, murals, or markings conveying artwork or other messages. In the early morning hours of October 18th, crews showed up to bulldoze a rainbow crosswalk at Westheimer and Taft in the queer Montrose area of Houston. Four activists were arrested trying to stop them. The beloved street marker has been a symbol of queer pride and a memorial to a young gay man killed in that intersection since 2017. City Council candidate Ethan Hale and three others were charged with failure to disperse after a short standoff. A church in Dallas has a colorful response to the governor's attempt to limit life to black and white in the Lone Star State. There's also a rainbow crosswalk near the queer-welcoming Oak Lawn United Methodist Church, at least for now. Just in case, they've painted the broad steps of the entrance to their sanctuary in bright rainbow colors, out of the state's reach. A statement from Senior Pastor Rachel Griffin Allison explained, "When forces of power try to erase symbols of queer joy and inclusion, the church has a choice, to retreat into comfort or to step forward in courage. We're choosing courage."
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending October 25th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm David Hunt. Stay safe.
Listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends,
we celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Now let's rewind to some key queer moments. The final White House picket by the East Coast homophile organizations marched on October 23, 1965. Picketers included iconic activists like Barbara Giddings and Frank Kameny. After a series of earlier demonstrations, organizers felt more institutional approaches were needed, so this particular picket marked a turning point in activism strategy and led to the founding of both local and national gay and lesbian rights organizations.
The U.S. Department of Defense issues a directive to allow openly gay individuals to enlist in the military on October 19, 2010. This marks a historic moment in the dismantling of don't ask, don't tell policies, a milestone in queer military service.
On October 21st, 1983, activism and tension over inclusion and recognition arise when Orthodox Eastern churches in the U.S. threaten to withdraw from the National Council of Churches if the predominantly gay and lesbian Metropolitan Community Church was admitted. While the MCC holds official status as a member of several U.S. statewide councils, it has been denied even observer status by the National Council of Churches.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is just ahead.
On October 16, 1891, the renowned gay Irish writer Oscar Wilde probably celebrated his 37th birthday in Paris, maybe at the Café de la Paix with André Gide and other friends from the literary salons of Stéphane Mallarmé. A poem by Mallarmé helped pique Wilde's interest in Salomé, and he was writing a play about her in French. Also in attendance may have been the young poet Lord Alfred Douglas, Wilde's beloved Bosie, whose father hounded Wilde until Wilde ended up in prison for homosexuality. After Wilde's death, Bosley translated Salome into English. This Way Out toasts Wilde's birthday with an excerpt from a production of the play directed by Leonard Nimoy before his fabled Star Trek career.
Pacifica Radio presents Oscar Wilde's Salome. Here with some comments on the play is the director of this production, Leonard Nimoy.
Oscar Wilde's Salome was written in 1891 in French. It was a prolific year for the author. He'd published four books that year, including The Picture of Dorian Gray. And because he wanted recognition in France, he made his bid by writing Salome in the French language. Whether the play was or was not written for Sarah Bernhardt, it impressed the great actress so much that she intended to produce it in England with herself in the title role. But the play was banned under a rule made by the Lord Chamberlain against the performance in public of plays on biblical subjects. Wilde was furious and threatened to become a French subject, but Bernhardt consoled him by promising to produce it at her own theater in Paris. Wilde tried to get Bernhardt to make good this promise, but this was at the time of his trial against Lord Queensberry, and the actress refused to acknowledge his letters. Salome's first performance was given by Lugnier Poe, who presented it to the playgoers in Paris in 1896, while its author was serving time in Reading Jail. Wilde wrote, "It is something that at a time of disgrace and shame, I should still be regarded as an artist." And later, when discussing his experiences at Reading, he remarked, "The production of Salome was the thing that turned the scale in my favor as far as my treatment in prison by the government was concerned." In 1901, within a year after Wilde's death, it was produced in Berlin and had a regular place on the German stage, and it was set to music as an opera by Richard Strauss. It has been performed in all the capitals of the Western world more constantly than any other modern English play, and performed in English using the translation of Lord Alfred Douglas.
Courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives, we present the last minutes of the play. After Salome has been rejected by the imprisoned Yochanan, has danced for King Herod, and requested the head of Yochanan on a silver charger.
I will bite it with my teeth as one bites a ripe fruit. Yes, I will kiss thy mouth, Yochanan. I said it. Did I not say it? I said it. I will kiss it now. But wherefore dost thou not look at me, Yochanan? Thine eyes that were so terrible, so full of rage and scorn, are shut now. Or wherefore are they shut? Open thine eyes. Lift up thine eyelids, Yochanan. Wherefore dost thou not look at me? Art thou afraid of me, Yochanan, that thou wilt not look at me? And thy tongue, that was like a red snake darting poison. It moves no more. It speaks no words, Yochanan, that scarlet viper that spat its venom upon me. It is strange, is it not? How is it that the red viper stirs no longer? Thou wouldst have none of me, Yochanan. Thou rejected me. Thou didst speak evil words against me. Thou didst bear thyself toward me as to a harlot, as to a woman that is a wanton, to me. Salome, daughter of Herodias, Princess of Judea. Well, I still live. But thou art dead, and thy head belongs to me. I can do with it what I will. I can throw it to the dogs and to the birds of the air. That which the dogs leave, the birds of the air shall devour. Oh, Yochanan. Thou wert the man that I loved alone among men. All other men were hateful to me. Thou wert beautiful. Thy body was a column of ivory set upon feet of silver. It was a garden full of doves and lilies of silver. It was a tower of silver decked with shields of ivory. There was nothing in the world so white as thy body. There was nothing in the world so black as thy hair. In the whole world there was nothing so red as thy mouth. Thy voice was a censer that scattered strange perfumes. And when I looked on thee, I heard strange music. Wherefore did thou not look at me, Yochanan? With the cloak of thine hands and with the cloak of thy blasphemies, thou didst hide thy face. Thou didst put upon thine eyes the covering of him who would see his God. Well, thou hast seen thy God, Yochanan, but me. Me thou dost never see. If thou hadst seen me, thou hadst loved me. I saw thee, and I loved thee. Oh, how I loved thee. I love thee yet, Yochanan. I love only thee. I am athirst for thy beauty. I am hungry for thy body. And neither wine nor apples can appease my desire. What shall I do now, Yochanan? Neither the floods nor the great waters can quench my passion. I was a princess and thou didst scorn. I was a virgin, and thou didst take my virginity from me. I was chaste, and thou didst fill my veins with fire. Oh, wherefore did thou not look at me? If thou had looked at me, thou had loved me. Well, I know that thou would have loved me. And the mystery of love is greater than the mystery of death.
She is monstrous, thy daughter. I tell thee, she is monstrous. In truth, what she has done is a great crime. I'm sure that it is. Crime against some unknown god.
I am well pleased with my daughter. She has done well. And I would stay here now.
Ah, there speaks my brother's wife. Come. I will not stay in this place. Come, I tell thee. Surely some terrible thing will befall. Manasseh! Isadatius, put out the torches. I will not look at things. I will not suffer things to look at me. Put out the torches. Hide the moon. Hide the stars. Let us hide ourselves in our palace, Herodias. I begin to be afraid.
Oh. I have kissed thy mouth, Yohanan. I have kissed thy mouth. There was a bitter taste on my lips. Was it the taste of blood? Nay. But perchance it was the taste of love. They say that love hath a bitter taste. But what matter? What matter? I have kissed thy mouth.
Kill that woman!
You've been listening to an excerpt of Oscar Wilde's play Salome. If you would like to hear the full radio drama directed by Leonard Nimoy in 1963 for Pacifica Radio, you can visit This Way Out on SoundCloud for our extended podcast. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
For choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by David Hunt and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written and produced by Sherry Lund and Brian DeShazer. Brian also produced the excerpt from Salome, starring Gail Colby, Barry Atwater, and Jeannie Bates, and directed by Leonard Nimoy. Van Morrison and Andrew Huang performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Hal Myers of Santa Fe, New Mexico, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, celebrating 50 years together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you